Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the Samuel Z. Arkoff building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia. It's Phantasmo After Dark with your host, Rob Floyd. Our topic tonight, giant monsters of the 50s, 60s, and 70s that aren't Godzilla or King Kong. Well, hey, everybody. How's that for a topic? Was that long enough? Welcome to the old podcast. We're back this week, giant monsters of the 50s, 60s, and 70s that aren't Godzilla or King Kong. Got a lot to cover, surprisingly enough. Probably some stuff you might not have heard of, which is kind of cool because it gives you something to look for. Phantasmo Cult Cinema Explosion is the double feature cult movie night that we do every other month at the Chesapeake Central Library. Up on the big screen there, we show double feature cult movies. And it's a lot of fun, and it's free. And hopefully we show stuff that you haven't seen before, or at least haven't had a chance to see up on the big screen. So come on out to that and check us out on Facebook, Phantasmo Cult Cinema Explosion. Coming up in October, October 3rd, first Saturday, is Monster Fest, the annual one-day horror convention we put on. And lots of cool stuff this year. Of course, the Cemetery Boys will be back playing all day long. We have over 60 tables of vendors, so you can buy cool stuff, hang out with fellow horror fans, attend some really cool panels and presentations. And our special guest this year, we're really lucky, we have Veronica Carlson joining us, the Hammer Babe, yes, from Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed and Dracula Has Risen from the Grave. A lovely lady, a sweet person. Admission to Monsterfest is free. Veronica will be charging for autographed pictures and such, but it's worth every penny. And she, by the way, she's an amazing artist, too. Hopefully she'll have some prints of her work there, and you don't want to miss that. Get a signed print from the artist, and the artist is Veronica Carlson. How cool is that? Also this year, we're celebrating Dr. Madblood's 40th anniversary. Dr. Madblood, our own Tidewater horror host, we all grew up on, 40 years bringing us Kerstinkers and classic movies. Some of Madblood will be there during the day, and some of the cast and crew. Come meet them, get pictures, get stuff signed, and help us celebrate his 40th anniversary. And of course, that night, we have the Phantasmo Monster Fest edition double feature. We'll be showing Veronica's movies, Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed and Dracula's Risen from the Grave. You can't beat that. In the whole day, it's free, no cost. Hey, if you want to drop us a line and let us know we're doing good, or we suck, or you never want to hear us again, or suggest some topics for us to go over, we have a new email. It's phantasmoad@gmail.com. That is phantasmode, if you will, @gmail.com. And also you can drop us a line, or, you know, say hey on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page. So either one of those is cool. Let us know. Let us know somebody's out there listening, please. Oh, besides Mom. I mean, she calls me and tells me, so that's okay, you know. But anyway, hey, our topic tonight, giant monsters of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Now, Phyllis, my wife, and I, we do panels and presentations at some of the local conventions, MarsCon, we've been to RavenCon, etc. And we do these PowerPoint presentations on some really cool cult movie topics. And this is one that we did, I believe we did this, actually, I think we did this one at Fantasy last year at the Chesapeake Central Library. And so I'm going to give it a go on the podcast and see how it works without the PowerPoint. But this is a really cool one. The giant monsters, everybody likes giant monster movies. Everybody loves Godzilla. But there's so many more of them out there. And different types of monsters in every shape, fashion, and form. And different locales, too. Not just Tokyo and not just New York. One of the very first, or the very first, really, I do believe, was in 1953, was The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. And, of course, this is Ray Harryhausen, one of his first films, which came out actually a year before Godzilla did, the original Gojira. Kenneth Toby was in this. He'll show up quite a few other times. This was based on a Bradbury story called The Foghorn. And the monster in this was 30 feet tall and 100 feet long. Not a very big monster, but a really cool design nonetheless. This had a nuclear bomb test that awakens a beast, and he makes his way down to New York. And a bazooka blast to the throat makes him bleed, unleashing a horrible, virulent prehistoric germ. They need to shoot a radioactive isotope in the wound to kill him. And the coolest, this is the coolest way to kill a monster ever. And you got to see this. Lee Van Cleef is our hero. The Lee Van Cleef rides a roller coaster to the top to get to eye level of the creature so he can shoot him. It's a great, one of the greatest scenes in giant monster movies ever. A guy riding a roller coaster with a gun to shoot a giant monster in the eye. Incredible. Got to see it to believe it. and the monster looks pretty cool too. Very, you know, really menacing. And it's Ray Harryhausen. Who doesn't love Ray Harryhausen? The king. Next up, Them. Everybody loves the giant ants, and Them is the best of the bunch. This had, actually, you got some cowboys in this. You got James Arness from Gunsmoke and Fess Parker, Davy Crockett, James Whitmore, a lot of names in this. Nimoy, actually, Leonard Nimoy had a very small part in this. If you blink, you'll miss him. This was the first of the big bug movies and arguably the best in most people's opinions. The ants were mutated by atomic bomb tests, and they get killed by flamethrowers. You know, pretty cut and dried. It's really a good movie, though. It's, you know, it's got a little suspense, a little horror in it, so, you know, a couple jump scares. Originally, this was supposed to be in 3D. I'm not sure why they didn't do it in 3D, probably because it just cost too much. And most of these movies were low-budget movies, despite the, you know, the effects, the giant monster effects. They were low-budget, you know, drive-in type movies. Now, after this, It Came from Beneath the Sea in 1955, another Ray Harryhausen classic. Kenneth Toby shows up again as the lead hero. And this was the one where it's a giant octopus. And the interesting thing about this is if you... Octopus have, what, 8 arms, right? Count the arms in this. You never see more than 6 arms at a time. And that was just a budget thing. It would cost more to animate 2 more arms. So typically, most of the times, you see 2 arms, but the most you ever see is 6. That's the most fun thing about this movie is counting, is realizing it was some point like, that's octopus is missing 2 arms. And a giant octopus. Octopus are creepy in and of themselves, but not as creepy and not as threatening to most people as spiders are. Which, how'd you like that segue? Which brings us to the 1955 classic, Tarantula. Now, Tarantula was directed by Jack Arnold, known for Creature from the Black Lagoon, directing that, and a few other sci-fi classics, and I think he actually went on a direct, might have directed a couple episodes of I Love Lucy. I'm not sure. I have to check into that. I think I read that somewhere. But Tarantula is infamous. Leo G. Carroll was over a barrel. Okay, I have to say that. I can't. It's ingrained in my psyche. John Agar was in this also. John Agar was in everything in the 50s and 60s. An atomic isotope creates... They were trying to create a superfood nutrient and ended up creating a giant spider instead. Yeah, and they're not fooling around in this one now. The way the spider dies, no, it's not bullets. No, it's not a flamethrower. No, screw all that. Napalm. Yeah, they fly jets and they napalm the hell out of this giant spider. They're not playing around. The effects in this, they used a real spider, actually, against, you know, green screen or against a filmed image, background filmed image. And some scenes it looks kind of cool, and some scenes it looks like, you know, blow up of a real spider getting on a screen. But before Arachnophobia, there was Tarantula. Now we jump ahead to 1957. 1957 had brought us a few cool, you know, pretty cool movies. And my favorite was 20 Million Miles to Earth. This giant monster in this starts out as a small, tiny monster and grows throughout the course of the film. This, once again, was Ray Harryhausen, probably one of my favorite creatures of his, this side of the Cyclops from Sinbad. Has a little bit in common with that as far as the creature design, if the legs and the shoulders and everything, but it's a really cool-looking creature, the Ymir, or the Ymir, depending on how you pronounce it. And who you're talking to. Such a cool creature. This one actually takes place in Italy, which is an odd location. Not a typical location for these movies, but it turns out the reason they chose this location is because Ray wanted a vacation in Rome. And that's why that's why this is set in Italy, so Ray could get a free vacation to Rome. William Hopper's in this. William Hopper from Perry Mason, Paul Drake. He's our hero in this. And this is great because the scenes, the scenes in Italy, you got the Colosseum, and I believe they, a bazooka to the shot and the Colosseum falls on him, or parts of the Colosseum falls on him and kills the creature. There's a really cool scene where the emir is a little bit bigger and then an elephant. And then he has a fight with an elephant that escapes from a zoo or something in Italy. I guess it happens in Italy. But it's all the raised stop motion animation. It's just beautiful to watch. Beats the hell out of the CGI stuff. Next up, we've got Amazing Colossal Man. Atomic accident causes our poor, wretched soul to grow over 60 feet tall, lose all his hair, and his heart isn't able to pump sufficient blood to sustain his brain, so slowly he goes insane. And you see him walking through old Vegas, which is pretty cool. And I believe the end of this one, he actually falls off the Boulder Dam, or Hoover Dam, depending on who you're talking to. And it wasn't enough. People wanted more of the Colossal Man. So in 1958, we got War of the Colossal Beast. Completely different cast. And we find out that he is not dead. He did not die at the end of the fall. Didn't kill him. It just disfigured his face pretty bad. And this one gets confused a lot with Cyclops. Because the same thing. He's only got like one eye showing. And is disfigured. And he's bald. And he's tall. And he's wearing a big diaper. But it's not. Cyclops is a different movie. We'll talk about that in just a second. In this, the way he dies, though, his sister brings him to his senses, and he electrocutes himself on some high wires. It's a sad, bittersweet ending. But it's kind of a creepy look, though. This is the one where half his face is normal and half his face is like a skull. Really kind of neat makeup in that, in the look. It's really creepy looking. Now, Cyclops, that we were just talking about, actually came out before Colossal Beast. Came out, I think the same year as The Amazing Colossal Man. Yeah, that was 57. Lon Chaney Jr. is in this, playing a small role in this. This one has to do with a test pilot has gone missing, and his girlfriend searches for him in the Mexican jungle with these other scientists and stuff, and they find giant animals, and they come across this giant Cyclops. And shenanigans ensue. And I'm not sure. I've never actually had a chance to see this film. It's kind of hard to find, I believe. I don't think I could find it on YouTube or a DVD of it anywhere right now. But it's one that, like I said, it does get confused. And sometimes when they show pictures of it, they'll list it as War of the Colossal Beast. And it's not. It is a Cyclops. It's got a really messed up face. One bulging eye and his mouth is kind of screwed up. I can't say that I dislike the movie or not because I haven't seen it. But it can't be too much different than War of the Colossal Beast. Now, if you like those three, there's a trilogy for you. But we move on to Deadly Mantis, more of the Big Bugs movies. This one, William Hopper, is again our hero in this. A volcano melts polar ice caps and releases a 200-foot-long praying mantis. And it gets down to D.C. and creates havoc and then goes through a traffic tunnel and they set off a bomb, and the tunnel collapses on the praying mantis and kills him. Pretty cut and dried. But who doesn't like seeing giant praying mantis roaming around? They missed the boat on this. They really could have done, a deadly mantis versus tarantula and had them duke it out in another movie, like, was it Corman's doing, all the Sci-Fi Channel movies now. Monster That Challenged the World. A lot of these movies came out in 57. Monster That Challenged the World was another one. Where we had Tim Holt, cowboy actor Tim Holt in this, and underwater earthquake releases prehistoric mollusks. And not real threatening, but creepy coming out of the water. And they just kill him with gunshots. It's not spectacular. It's really not a great film. Kind of boring, but it has a great title, The Monster That Challenged the World. And really it just challenges a few guys and in the boats, just in the water, just outside of that little sea town. So it's a little misleading. Not in my top 10. Now, The Monster from the Green Hell. That was another 57 film where we're sending various animals into space, and the ship that carries the giant wasp goes off course, goes through cosmic radiation, and comes back to, I guess it lands in the Green Hell, which is an area in Africa. and they gets killed in a volcano. So that's about all there is to that one. Not a very memorable film, nothing spectacular about it, but if you're completist, seek it out. Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, we move on to 1958, same year the Colossal Beast came up, and this we have the infamous Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. Again, not a great film, but it's still a fun one to watch. This woman has a drinking problem, driving along at night down the highway, and comes across an alien spaceship that lands, and she veers off the side of the road, and wrecks, and goes to find the alien. The alien touches her, and this is what causes her to grow. She wakes up the next morning on top of a pool house, and throughout the course of them, she slowly starts growing taller and taller until she's 50 feet high. They try to chain her up. She breaks out and goes after her cheating husband and hunts him down, is killing his girlfriend. I think drops a beam on her, rips the top off a bar she's in, and drops part of the bar on her and kills her. And so don't cheat, guys, or at least don't get caught. You know, your girlfriend may meet an alien and turn into a 50 woman, drop a beam on your girlfriend. they kill her, though. They shoot a power transformer and blows up beside her and kills her. I think MST3K may have done this before. It's another one that has an infamous title, but is really the title and the hype around it is a lot better than the movie itself. But it's definitely worth checking out if you get a chance. Easy to find. It's you can get it off Amazon. Now, we go up to 1959 and The Giant Behemoth. This was the last time Willis O'Brien, who, you know, worked on King Kong, was Ray Harryhausen's inspiration, designed the animation on film. They kill it with a torpedo to the mouth. And there's a scene where the car, I think, smashes into the beast, where they used it three times in different different parts of the film. Definitely one to check out, especially for the Willis O'Brien connection. Now, Giant Gila Monster in 1959 is one where we... one of the ones where they use... take close-ups of an actual smaller creature. The Gila monsters they're big, but they're not this big. They take close-up shots of the Gila monster and blow them up on, you know, a big screen to make it look like it's a giant monster. This this film was produced actually by Ken Curtis, who was Festus in Gunsmoke. So before Gunsmoke, or maybe during, I'm not sure when Gunsmoke came on, Ken Curtis produced horror films, believe it or not. They used a real Gila monster and small models of cars and buildings to make him look giant. And the way they kill the Gila monster is they load a jalopy, a car full of nitroglycerin and kamikaze it into the monster, and it blows up and kills him. Now, these were filmed, I think these were filmed back to back. The Killer Shrews is another one that Ken Curtis, I believe he also produced that, and he's in this film along with James Best, who is our hero. Yes, Roscoe P. Coltrane is the hero in a horror movie. The Killer Shrews, very infamous film. This is the one where they took carpets and various furs and made costumes to put on actual dogs and put bigger fangs on them. And it's just, oh, it's horrible. You got to see it to believe it. They experimented on shrews to produce smaller humans to end world hunger, but instead it creates mutated giant shrews. And these people try to leave the island, and some of them don't make it. but the odd thing about this movie, this is an infamous, pretty easy to find movie. Infamous because it is so bad, but it's so good at the same time. I have not seen this yet, but apparently in 2012... James Best did Return of the Killer Shrews, and I think he had John Schneider in it with him. God help them both. I need to seek this out. James Best, who actually we lost recently, I think last year. You know, if you look up his career, he did a lot more than Roscoe on Dukes of Hazzard. He taught acting for years, taught a lot of other actors in acting courses, and did a lot of other films, but he'll always be known as Roscoe P. Coltrane to everybody. Nice fellow, though. Had a chance to meet him a few times at the Williamsburg Classic Film Festival. And that, you know, a lot of fun. Really nice, nice guy. Moving on, Reptilicus in 61. What a great title, Reptilicus. This took place in Denmark. Now, we changed locations again. Instead of an unnamed island in Shrews, we're in Denmark. Why Denmark? Why not Denmark? Danish miners dig up a giant section of this mine, and they find a reptile tail, or they dig up a giant section of a reptile tail that fully regenerates into Reptilicus. And they kill it by poison. You know, not very imaginative way to die, but works nonetheless. This interesting thing about this, out of all these giant monsters, there were only three, and it's this one and the next two we're going to talk about, where they did comics of. Reptilicus had two issues, a two-issue run of Reptilicus, which is, if you can find it, it'd probably cost you a little penny. I'm not sure who did it, what the company or the artist was, but it is out there. The next one on the list, Konga, 1961, which is the British King Kong, more or less. There was a comic series. Steve Ditko actually did this from 62 to 64. Konga, it was an ongoing comic series, and it apparently was successful. It went, you know, for a couple of years. Now, here we have, from Hammer Films, we got Michael Goh. Oh, he was Horror of Dracula. He was Alfred in the Michael Keaton Batman movie. Chewing up some scenery here is the scientist. He has, of course, and this was in color. Now, we're starting to get into color films here, which kind of changes the look and the whole mood of the films from, you know, low budget quaint to low budget cheap. he turns, the funny thing is he gives the serum to a chimp, and as the chimp gets bigger, he turns from a chimp to a gorilla, but we're not supposed to, you know, bother worrying about that. He hypnotizes the ape to kill his enemies. And the serum allows him to hypnotize the gorilla, who's just pretty much gorilla size at this point. Now, his girlfriend, who he spurned, gives a larger amount to the gorilla, to Konga, and he grows giant in this. Now, the size varies. This is the funny thing about this. You're watching this movie, and once he's grown to his full height, and he's going after, you know, breaking through buildings, killing people, whatever. He changes sizes depending on the scene or the one he's near. You could probably play a drinking game. Every time he changes sizes, you know, you take a drink. I believe I will. The army kills him, and after they kill Konga, he changes back to a chimp. He reduces size and changes to a chimp. So not only does the serum cause him to grow, it causes him to change species. How amazing is that? 61 also brought us Gorgo, which is one of my favorite giant monster movies. I love the design of the creature. It's a reptile, Godzilla-type creature, but it really has its own distinct look, especially those fin, wing-like ears. And it's an unusual film. And at first, you get two monsters for the price of one, but you don't know that going in. The first monster you see, the Gorgo, is actually the baby Gorgo. We find out later, we don't know that right at first, but he's 65 feet tall, and this ship that's broke down on this remote island area, and the villagers are, of course, all weary of strangers. This monster attacks this island every once in a while, and these guys decide they're going to capture this beast and take him back to London to make a bunch of money. So one night he attacks, and they capture Gorgo, and they have him on the ship. They take him back to London, and when they're getting ready to display him in the circus, of course, they have the scientist giving his opinion, determines that this Gorgo is a baby, and they, you know, says that the mother, or the, you know, the parent Gorgo, if it's out there, it could be three times as big as this monster. And out there it is, and Mama Gorgo comes to get her baby. And it's really, you know, it's got some great scenes of going through Piccadilly Circus and trashing the buildings and the signs in most of London, and then goes and gets the baby Gorgo from the circus, and then just walks away and goes home. That's the cool thing about this film. One of the coolest things is the monster doesn't die at the end, and the monster's not really a bad guy destroying everything. This is almost going back to like Frankenstein, where the monster's sympathetic. If you take into account that the Gorgo is the original one we see, is the baby, and he's coming out on the island, he's just acting like a little kid playing, tearing stuff up, not really out to really kill anybody. He's just playing, and he gets taken away, stolen, taken to another country, another land, and the mother comes to get her baby, and then doesn't, once she gets the baby, she doesn't care about destroying anything else. She just leaves, just goes back home. The effects in it are pretty good. This is being probably in my top five giant monster movies I'd recommend. And oh, and then also Steve Ditko did a comic series from 62 to 64. There were 23 issues, and it's really cool. In fact, this, the Gorgo series and the Conga series have been captured in like coffee table hardback books you can get. I think it's called Ditko Monsters, each one, volume one, volume two, Conga and Gorgo. And they're fantastic. It's got every issue of each one and beautiful reproductions of the artwork. And it's Steve Ditko. I mean, come on. Highly recommended. See Gorgo. And if you get a chance, though, see the Blu-ray. I've had the DVD and the Blu-ray, and it's all the difference in the world. The DVD looks like they just transferred it right from the VHS tape. It's not restored or anything, but the Blu-ray is cleaned up and has beautiful image on it. Now, we go from 61, we jump to 67, to Yongari, Monster from the Deep, the Korean giant monster movie with the horn on the nose. And the suit is unremarkable. Not a whole lot to say about this. The movie is really kind of boring. I've tried to watch it a couple times in recent years and had a hard time sitting through it. So you're on your own on that one. I think that is available on the MGM Midnight Movies double disc set with Conga. I think that's how I've got it anyway. Easy to find. Not a whole lot to say about it. Watch at your own risk. So we're going to jump ahead to 1972 and we're going to get to the infamous legendary film Night of the Lepus. Yes, giant killer rabbits. Oh my god. the thing about this one is that the cast, we've got Rory Calhoun, Stuart Whitman, Janet Leigh, and DeForest Kelly. This is what D did after Star Trek. Dr. McCoy sporting a smart ascot. You know, all the swingers wore ascots. DeForest Kelly, Fred from Scooby-Doo, Mr. Furley. I mean, you know, all of them, you know, they should bring the ascot back. Let's do that. Let's start a movement. Bring the ascot back. What do you think? Yeah, drop us a line. Let us know. So anyway, Night of the Lepus, giant killer rabbits. This thing is so horrible and so much fun. They used real rabbits, close-up footage and models, miniature buildings, miniature cars, and the effects are so bad. The thing is, the rabbits, they're just not scary. You can't make these. You can't make it. They smear blood on them, on their mouths, and it's just rabbits just hopping through these miniature sets. It's laughable. It's oh, but you have to see it. You have to see it. Night of the Lepus. They injected with serum. They get electrocuted on railroad tracks, I believe is how they kill them. Close-ups of, they use puppet paws, I guess, take close-ups of the paws, and people in rabbit suits, believe it or not. This is one, a must-see-to-be-believed film. Night of the Lepus. We showed it at Phantasmo one night a couple years ago, and everybody, oh, they loved it. It was so... I don't know what else to say about it. Night of the Lepus, giant rabbits. Check it out. Which brings us up to 1976 and Food of the Gods, from the loosely adapted from the H.G. Wells novel Food of the Gods. This we get Ida Lupino slumming with Marjo Gortner. The Marjo Gortner. Yes, it is. This has one of the greatest posters for any of these giant monsters movies. And this was the giant... There was a trend in the 70s where nature attacks films, and there was like Grizzly and Day of the Animals and Food of the Gods and a few of the others, but this one is probably the most infamous of them, and it has such a great poster, a real creepy poster, and I think this was even the cover of a Famous Monsters issue that came out that year. Giant rats, I think you get giant chickens at some point. Some puppets, some big puppets used for when they're attacking some people, and a lot of actual filming the actual rats and such, and I want to say superimposed over existing footage of like houses and things. This one isn't hard to find either. Check it out. If you've never seen it, Food of the Gods, it's one of those that you do have to see. And hey, and Marjo Gortner. Now, we're getting to pretty much the last one on the list. 1977, Empire of the Ants. This one is another one of the giant ant movies. And I believe there was one other, but this one you've got Joan Collins, Robert Lansing, Robert Pine, Pamela Susan Shoup, and Jacqueline Scott. And Jacqueline Scott is a very nice lady, by the way. Had a pleasure to meet her in Williamsburg a few years ago. And she is going to be a guest at the Williamsburg Classic Film Festival this coming year, 2016, the next one. I believe it's the first week of March. If you get a chance, come to it, meet Jackie Scott. She's a delightful lady. And who knows, maybe I can get a few minutes with her and get her on the podcast to talk about this film. This one, yeah, toxic spill creates these giant ants, and Joan Collins has to fight them. They use real ants, and the size. This is another one where, depending on the scene, the size varies from when they're on the pier to when they're in a building to when they're coming after people. Their size changes. It's not supposed to, but it's just not very consistent. This is another one I think is on the MGM Midnight Movies. I think it's a double feature with Tentacles, or Tentacles, depending on where you're from. What? Hey, you know, this is not... definitely not an all-encompassing list. This is just a very brief overview of giant monsters from the 50s, 60s, and 70s that aren't Godzilla or King Kong. If I've left any out or if I missed your favorite one, drop us a line at the phantasmoad@gmail.com or on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page and let me know. Let me know who I missed. Let me know who was your favorite. I'll put up pictures on the Phantasmo page as the podcast is being aired for the first time and some trailers from some of these movies. So maybe give you a better view of if some of them you hadn't seen, maybe, you know, you want to check them out. That'll give you a little insight into them. And, you know, who doesn't like giant monsters? I mean, from the silly to the serious, they're just a lot of fun. And everybody has their favorite. I would say probably in my top five of this list would be Gorgo, 20 Million Miles to Earth. Oh, let's see. Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. And what's that? Is that three? Four? And Night of the Lepus and Food of the Gods, just for contrast. But you decide. You check it out. See these movies. If nothing else, if anything from this podcast is like sparked your interest in checking out some of these movies, by all means do. Watch these movies. Tell your friends. Watch them with your friends and enjoy them for whatever reason. Whether you like the movies, whether they're cheesy and you're tearing on them. But they're all, regardless, they're just a lot of fun. So that's about it for me this time. And remember, watch more horror movies. And we'll see you next time. Good night, everybody.